Welcome back to another episode of Stable Pod, a podcast where we host conversations with individuals who are shaping the future of decentralized systems. I'm your host, Juan Escavel. I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Gustav Ehrentoft. How are you feeling today, Gustav?
I'm feeling very good. And, you know, today is a special episode for me because we're talking with an old friend of mine. So really excited for today.
Today's guest is leading the frontier, helping onboard the next wave of Web3 users through fun and innovative on-chain gaming platforms. Jeffrey Jiho Zerlin is the co-founder of Sky Mavis, a team on a mission to create economic freedom for gamers by building games that are truly player-owned. Welcome to the podcast, Jiho.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Before we get into Sky Mavis and Ronin and all the hard work your team is doing, I'd love to first dive in a little bit more into Jiho the individual as a founder. I think our listeners can appreciate and recognize your continued success as a founder. To what do you owe this continued success?
I mean, I think success is relative. And I think for us, the thing that we've always had is a very supportive community, right? Even in this, in the early days when it was small, it was very passionate and we could tell that it was special. And, you know, this community has battled through a few bear markets together now, right? It's like this was we're just coming out of a very brutal one, and I think this community is special, right? They're like warrior philosophers, and you know, to me, that's really the root of a lot of, you know, why we've been able to have continued success.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, serving your community is very inspirational to you and what you're building.
It's foundational.
So. Awesome. Where do you find the inspiration to ship relentlessly? I want to touch on 2023 just for a little bit at the beginning of this conversation. But I know you guys, you know, shipped a lot last year and it was like a big focus for you. So I'm just curious where you found, the inspiration to be one of the few teams that were constantly shipping in the bear.
Well, we learned, right? We saw that was what you do during the bear, right? That's actually the blessing of the bear. You may feel really bad about everything that's happening, about the sentiment and about the prospects, and I guess the near-term prospects for this space, but you have to find solace in that. You have to find opportunities in the quiet. And for us, that was, you know, experimenting, setting the stage. And I think it was easier for us in a lot of ways because we'd done it before. And the hardest was in 2018, 2019, when you don't really know if it's ever going to happen, right? But once you do it once and you're like, okay, right, like we built throughout the 2018, 2019 bear and then it worked out 2020, 2021. To me, right, it's like, okay, we did it once. Let's do it again. Obviously, we'll build different things. There's new experiments to try. And we had a much larger team, right? So this was the first bear that we went through with, you know, 200 plus members on the team, which obviously affects your ability to increase output. So
awesome. What would you say, like, one part of your work that most people maybe don't fully understand or aware of like maybe your day-to-day as a co-founder?
Well, something that I learned was I used to try to lead the community in a certain way and try to lead internally in a different way, right? To kind of like be a manager, I guess, maybe as we started to get larger. But at the end of the day, I think I realized that you have to use the same type of leadership and the same mechanisms for coordinating behavior, both externally with the community and also internally on a day-to-day basis with the team. So I think that was one of the things that I learned over the last couple of years or so that I didn't really expect or that I had to kind of go through myself.
It's funny, and well, not funny, but it's interesting that you all three of your replies have been community-based, you know, replies. Mm-hmm. So that speaks a lot to what Ronin and Axie and all the communities over there really are like focused on. Community first, user first. I don't know. I just wanted to call that out. I find it very interesting. I want to switch over to your 2023. I want to speak a little bit about what the team built and shipped. First, I think, you know, simple question. Why is Ronin the best place to build and grow Web3 games?
Well, the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the data, right? Like everyone says that they're going to onboard millions of people and onboard billions of people. We're the only people that have done that at scale, especially as it relates to NFTs and gaming. So 2023, right, we basically upgraded the security of the Ronin network by migrating to DPoS, and then we announced our first wave of game studio partners. And then, right, the big breakthrough was in September with Pixels, right, their migration from Polygon. And yeah, actually, they just hit 1 million monthly active users today. So today was a big milestone for them. They're also at, I believe, 550,000 DAU. So a lot of people thought, hey, right, like Ronin is done, Axie is done. These guys are one-hit wonders. You know, maybe they invented the space, but they are not going to be the ones to take it to the next level. And so far, it seems like all those people were wrong. So I think, you know, to us, it's just, hey, you know, we try to rely on the facts, try to rely on the data, and try to rely on the thing that's unique to us, which is, right, like a lot of crypto is like either very too esoteric and academic around like scaling and theoretical things. And then there's like a lot of, right, like very, very immature, I guess, stuff, right? So it's kind of like the two extremes, whereas we try to be like moderates, right, in the middle, right? It's like we have fun. We know how to get people interested in how to engage with our products, right? Like gaming is obviously perfect for that. But we also, right, like, believe that we're on a very serious mission, right? We believe that crypto and Web3 is a life raft, and that by onboarding people, you're really making a huge difference in their lives and their futures and potentially changing the course of human history. So yeah.
So, I mean, exactly as you said, you know, it's like you look at the data, and I completely agree with you, like the data really doesn't lie, right? But I think, you know, maybe from like an uninformed outsider, it might look like that Polygon can do the same thing, you know? So why do you think that like when Pixels switched to Ronin, that they just started to take off? What would you say is like the main, you're probably going to mention community again, but that's perfect as well. But you know, maybe apart from community, what do you feel like are some of the things that Ronin just does better, you know, that enables this kind of like explosive growth for these things where they seemingly, you know, have the same opportunities elsewhere, you know, if you just look at it from an outsider's perspective?
Well, the Ronin network is specifically tailored for gaming, right? It was built for gamers, by gamers, Forged in Fire. And, you know, so we went through this whole process while building Axie of like, okay, like, are we going to use a scaling solution? Are we going to build it ourselves? We decided to build it ourselves. And we realized that, hey, like, nobody is doing the correct reconnaissance on a gaming scaling solution. If they were, they would be talking to us. They would be asking us interesting questions and figuring out how to actually build this thing. But because they're not talking to us, we basically assumed that nobody was doing the correct research on how to build a gaming chain. And we're like, okay, like let's build it ourselves, right? We had some bad experiences, right, trying to build on things like Loom Network, and they gave up and became like a healthcare startup or something.
yeah, we all remember those days.
So yeah, you know, I do think that, right, the fact that Ronin Network is specifically tailored for gaming, we also have like a bit of a different approach than many chains, right, where they're kind of spreading their resources is very thin. They're giving out grants left and right and just hoping that one of the hundreds of games that are building on these chains will stick. Whereas we believe in looking for teams that have cultural alignment with us. And, you know, what our thesis is that there will be, right, a lot of the teams that succeed will look like us when we were just starting out, lean, experimental, leaning into Web3. And you know, that was something that, you know, work that we saw with Pixels. And so I think, you know, the fact that the chain was able to accommodate Pixels, that there was also right focus, right, where people aren't being like, you know, having, there's not a different product every single day, or it was almost zen, right? Like, it's like, these are the things that we think have a good chance of melding well with this user base, with this player base, with this community. Ronin just works, right? It has the NFT marketplace, Mavis Market with guaranteed creator royalties. It has the Katana DEX. You know, it basically has all the tools that you would need for a game developer as well, and nothing else. And I think that like focus is very simplifying for the user.
Jiho, that was going to be my next question related to what you just said. There's a bit of a trade-off, right? Maybe you think differently when you balance onboarding, like this filtering. The team is selectively choosing the publishers and the gaming and the games that get onboarded, and this like constant desire to drive growth, right? Like as you mentioned, some of these other networks are like just throwing out grants left and right to drive adoption and growth of their and hopefully market share. Can you speak a little bit more to that trade-off and like why you think that's okay for Ronin to take this more, maybe more methodical, measured approach to onboard games?
In the beginning, right, of any new wave of technological adoption, you want to have a more integrated approach and you want there to be focus because the technology is so complex that you need to introduce a state of Zen for the users, for them to be able to comprehend and understand what to do. Obviously, this is also maybe at odds with right some of the ethos of decentralization, which is perhaps an argument for why it hasn't happened, right? Because it's counterintuitive, it's contrarian. But as an entrepreneur, you have to look for contrarian things right? What are the things that people think about Web3 adoption that are not true? What are the things that people believe about Web3 adoption that aren't true? Those are probably the things where there's opportunity. And so I think our approach is a little bit counterintuitive, and that's probably why it works, right? It's like, okay, we need a more integrated stack. We need to have less games at the beginning rather than more games so that users can focus. Obviously, this is not going to be the way that it is forever, right? So over time, at the beginning of any adoption curve, right, you have more integrated approaches winning out. But over time, right, more open models succeed and win, right? So then for us, the Ronin Network is like, how do we disrupt ourselves, right? How do we open up in a good way to allow more builders to come on with less kind of red tape and restrictions?
So Jiho, would you say that this doesn't only apply, well, you kind of said in the beginning, this wouldn't only apply to the gaming sector of our industry, right? It would apply to the other sectors, right? They should take this maybe more methodical approach you described, or would you say there's more nuance there? You know, DeFi and consumer, you know, consumer socials, Web3, all that good stuff.
It's hard for me to comment on things outside of gaming and around this.
I think if I can just jump in here, I think like we've actually seen a little bit the same happening in DeFi, right? I believe if we go back to 2019, right, which was I think like within the first 6 months of the year, we saw most of the DeFi protocols that are still the market leaders were launched within those 6 months, right? We had, you know, and Maker was launched in 2017, so a bit before, but you know, you still see, you know, like, you know, the compound model, compound and Aave, you know, Uniswap, like Balancer, Maker, right? Like you still see kind of like the DeFi 1.0 basically being like the most used DeFi protocols by like a very, very far margin, right? I think we see like Capital has been used, I think, like quite mercenary. And I think it can be a little bit the same with games, right? You can imagine if you come into like a gaming chain where there's like 1,000 games, but none of them is around, you know, in a couple of months time, you know, users and liquidity kind of like very quickly dissipates from it. So I would say like I can definitely see like similar trends happening in DeFi. If you look at the L2 landscape today, I would also say we have seen hundreds of L2s launched in the last couple of months, but it's still like the first initial ones that still has like by far like the dominant market share, right? I think there's still like quite a lot of friction and complexity around like skipping around. So I can definitely see kind of like similar tendencies just forming, not because of Ronin, you know, where that is the premise that is being pushed forward, but just because of like that's the way like the market dynamic kind of like works, right? Like if like a platform gains trust, it's difficult for people to change, even if they get a slightly better product or slightly better fee or a slightly better setup, right? They would prefer to kind of like stick with what is, you know, trusted and what they have confidence in.
Yeah, totally. I think you're touching on like network effects and distribution, which I think we could touch on in just a bit with Ronin, right? Because they're very, they have that, I think, down to a T. But first, I want to get in a little bit deeper into Ronin Chain. something we haven't spoken enough of yet on this podcast is about node validators and of course their role in governance. Stable Lab, of course, is running a governing validator for the Ronin chain. Jiho, could you explain for our listeners who may not be familiar with, you know, Ronin chain, you know, its structure, the role of the validators, and maybe like their role in governing the chain at a high level?
Yeah, sure. So right now there are 22 validators on the Ronin chain. We have governing validators and we have standard validators. So the governing validators are basically appointed, whereas the standard validators can be stood up by anyone. And it's basically the top validators by stake. So there's kind of like this competition to be able to grab one of those SV slots. We do have plans to increase the number of both governing validators, standard validators as well in the future. The governing validators are in charge of upgrades to things like the protocol and the bridge.
You mentioned before in the beginning of this conversation that in 2023, Ronin Chain switched from POA to DPoS. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe elaborate a little bit more on what this exactly is and was? And if it's been, have you seen it as a success? Like what have we seen, you know, in the time since? Like, was it for the best, this move, this shift over?
Yeah, so we basically upgraded from Proof Authority to DPoS in March of 2023. And at the same time, we basically enabled staking. So basically, RON holders can stake RON through the different validators. And yeah, we now have 199 million RON staked. So it's well over 50% of the circulating supply. I think it's really fun, right? We have different promotions by the different validators. I think everyone is pretty active in helping to promote the growth of the network. And I think it's its own little community, right? And you have different validators giving out rewards or airdrops to their stakers, right? So there's kind of like competition to attract stake and also right like around who's working to help kind of propagate the growth of the ecosystem. So to be honest, like I wouldn't say that it's anything too fancy, right? You can think of Ronin as an Ethereum sidechain. For us, we do believe that, right, like infrastructure and stuff like that eventually gets commoditized. Right now we're looking at, right, you know, how to scale Ronin. And obviously there are a lot of different paths. So we're quite heavy, like due diligence, right? Like around how you basically scale as more and more games come on board. Right now, right, part of the approach is to be careful about what contracts are deployed on the Ronin chain. But eventually, as things open up, we will have to scale Ronin to the next level, right? Where it's like, you know, perhaps you have L2s on top of Ronin that are, sending Merkle proofs or a variety of data packets onto the main Ronin chain.
So I think like, you know, you guys have taken like a quite a like simplistic approach so far, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is also something which kind of like speaks to the success of what you guys have done, right? Now you also mentioned here like yourself, like L2s. I think we've also seen, you know, kind of like the evolution of like sidechains like over the years, right? And, you know, some people could maybe categorize you guys as like, you know, a separate L1. But we've also seen, you know, both on like, you know, places like, you know, like Polygon and also like different, you know, mainnets like L1 specifically. And then also now like the L2s, they differ like a lot in like how they approach governance on the network, right? We see some of the L2s now have like, I would say, like a lot of governance, right? Like, you know, places like Optimism and Arbitrum. How do you believe that something like, you know, this would be like, you know, going in like the evolution of governance in Ronin, right? Is there some things that you're looking at right now where you think this looks interesting, or do you guys have any plans on expanding on what governance might look like for something like Ronin?
Governance is, especially like for an L1, can be super complex, right? Like even, right, there are a ton of issues, right, with token voting and things like that. Right, the differences between hard on-chain power and kind of soft social consensus. And so it's something that we think about a lot. There are certain things that, for example, you know, would not necessarily need to be controlled by governance, but it's like still good to go through some sort of a formal process, right? So we have a process called the Ronin evolution proposals, right, which are typically like reserved for like upgrades to things like the bridge or, you know, a hard fork by the validators. But then, right, one of the things that we see is people wanting to submit REPs for things that might not necessarily need to be determined by governance, but it might still, you know, be best practice, right, to have it go through that so more people can express their opinions on something. So it's something that we're interested in, right? It's it can sometimes, to be honest, be distracting, right? Where it's like we want to be lean, we want to be experimenting, we want to be getting users, and you know, the biggest risk of centralization, right, is not having any adoption, and it just being the developers kind of talking amongst themselves. Whereas, yeah, I think like the best approach to you know, a robust and interesting governance system in the long run is to have a very large population, and that's in the, you know, American Constitution, Federalist number 10, right? It's like the number one threat to the Republic is not having a large and diverse population.
Yeah, so
adoption. So basically, adoption might be, you know, the thing to maximize for, rather than like trying to overly, you know, to think about structure too much. Obviously, it's, you know, you want to be continuing to do the research and keeping up with the trends around it, and, you know, trying to maybe push the ball forward and from time to time. But I think, you know, it's still very, very murky. And I think there will be different, right? Like, there will be different preferences around like decentralization, right? And just like you have that in, you know, Singapore, right? Like, many people would regard as a successful country, but that has like a different system of government than others that, you know, other countries that might be deemed successful. And I think that you'll also have that diversity within different protocols. And I think that will actually be healthy, because if every protocol has the same governance structure, that's also not decentralized and anti-fragile.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think also, like, you know, we've definitely seen some protocols kind of like get the better of themselves by using, you know, governance, right? It can definitely also be like a hindrance, I think. But like, I just wanted to also like ask you, like, you know, what is it that kind of like, you know, it's like maybe holding you back, or what is it that like is pushing you forward? Why do you feel like the motivation for like, you know, a company like Sky Mavis is, you know, when you look at like governance, you know, what is like holding you back? What is like the motivation? I think that could be like interesting to hear.
I mean, the thing that we want to maximize for is like the long-term growth of the network and the health and growth, health and stability of the network. And making rapid changes and experimentation to governments, right? To governance, right? Like, can be something that risks all of those. So that's, you know, that's on the Ronin side of things, right? On the Axie side of things, you know, we are, you know, experimenting. We have set up a process, right, for contributors. I think with gaming, right, a lot of governance will revolve around how do you basically, right, like modify staking systems, perhaps, or staking or reward systems based on reputation, based on contribution. So these are some things that we're definitely like looking at, right? Like in the original AXS or Axis white paper, we have this concept of the Axie score, right? So I think for years now have believed that reputation would be an important mechanism within some of these you know, governance systems for games. But, you know, we also want to, you know, be lean, experimental, and to be able to iterate quickly, while also building in public, right? So I think there's like, you know, you can be lean, experimental, and very communicative with the community, without necessarily having to be forced to do what they want. And there's obviously also problems in terms of like, you know, how do you even measure that in a fair way, right? So those are some of the questions or considerations when it comes to kind of like gaming governance as well.
Yeah, totally, Jiho. I think, yeah, one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on, of course, is because I think Ronin's approach is unique, right? And our listeners are people, you know, in the weeds, actively trying to build, you know, governance and these different types of protocols. And so I thought it would be worthwhile for our listeners to hear, you know, what is gaming or and as it relates to governance to look like. And I think, as you mentioned, the whole reputation aspect in Axie is very interesting. I think that makes sense. But coming back to like player owned, like if you ask me or ask Gustav, maybe we're we're biased, and when we hear player owned, we think maybe like the right to help influence or govern, right? In some small aspect. So I'm curious, like maybe you already answered this type of question, but like, what does player owned mean to you?
So one of the things that attracted me to NFTs was I saw NFTs as digital deeds, right? Like I grew up trading Diablo items for real money, World of Warcraft items for real money, right? So it's like, to me, like this system of property rights as it relates to like your in-game items, I think, you know, that's part of the definition of ownership. Right. And also, right, like you have these tokens, right, like the Axis token, right? This is a value accrual token, right, that has some value that's really backed by the protocol fees, right? I mean, one thing that I'll say is, right, like there's a lot of excitement right now around the Uniswap potentially, you know, turning on the fee switch. Like we've had this fee switch for Axis, you know, on for four years now, right? So I think in a lot of ways, you know, things are actually kind of advanced and ahead of the curve on the Axie side of things, especially as it relates to the treasury.
Yeah, I think like I think it's funny because I think there's like some things with like NFTs where, you know, like of course, like I mean, Axie has been like a front runner of like that whole part of the space, and especially like something with like the fee switches on. And I think like for me personally, I've always seen like, you know, that like the NFT wave kind of like came, you know, like I think like a couple of years later than the DeFi wave. So they've always been to me like a couple of years behind where, you know, like there's been kind of like one leader, which was also kind of like the case with DeFi in the beginning, where it's been you guys, right? And then a lot of other teams kind of like trying to catch up. And I think this is also like why that like we yet haven't really seen a lot of like, I would say like proven gaming DAOs yet, right? I'm at least not like really aware of any. I don't know if you know any, but I think like Merit Circle, you know, has a DAO, but it's not really like a game, right? It's more kind of like a, yeah, it's like gaming associated. So like what are like some, so like if you look at like outside of like Axie, right, like what are some of the main developments that you hope to see within governance? Because I completely get it, you guys are like sitting in like a very like a market leader position, right? Which is where it gets difficult also to innovate among these things, because every time you do something truly new, you're taking a risk. So if you look at like the gaming landscape in general, like, you know, what are like some of the things that you would really want to see like being done in practice, you know, games experimenting with certain governance models or something like this?
Yeah, I think staking modifiers based on both on-chain and even off-chain achievements within these gaming ecosystems. I think like robust discussions around like use of treasury rewards around like, you know, should we be airdropping these to stakers? Should we be using these to buy back tokens? Should we be using these to augment staking rewards? Oh, like can we stand up processes to reward community members? Are we able to figure out like efficient and interesting mechanisms of distributing these through games? And I think like these are the things that, right, like gaming governance will start to think about. And then it's like, you know, how do you set up efficient? How do you fund right derivative projects, right? Like how do you fund, like, you know, I think you started to see this a little bit with like Nouns, right? But I think it was also like, right, like dangerously co-opted, I think, in certain ways, right? It kind of like fizzled out, is my understanding. I haven't heard about it for a while. I think those are the things, those are the questions that I'm interested in and that the community is interested in. And, you know, we've had some light experiments, right? Like I think there's a proposal now to create like a dashboard, fund community members to build a dashboard that tracks the inflows and outflows, or I guess mainly inflows into the Axie treasury. you know, the Axie market cap, the AXS market cap and things like that. And last season of governance, right, we do it in seasons right now. The community was able to like basically create a committee, hire an artist and design like a flag to represent itself as well. So we're doing experiments. I would say the progress is slow, maybe, but I think that's also like maybe the point of governance, right? It's like it's not necessarily supposed to be something that you come to a very rapid resolution and discovery around.
So. Do you think we'll see, I always had this kind of like, like idea in my head, and I think we also talked about these things back in the day, but where you could have like, let's say like, you know, balancing within a game defined by governance, or let's say like story progression for the game defined by governance, right? So you could kind of like, because I think that when we talk about governance today, we talk a lot about, you know, maybe the boring things, you know, it's like, you know, committees and councils and, you know, sticking rewards and financial mechanisms and these things. What about the fun stuff? You know, do you think that we will see more of this fun
balancing? Balancing, balancing is maybe ripe in a way, because actually it's hard to do balancing in a Web3 game because, right, it has such large implications. And so it is actually, so I once released, or a few times actually, back in the day, like we used to have like, we would release sheets to the community and we're like, hey, like fork the sheet and make, do your suggestions and we'll go through them and, you know, potentially use the best ideas. I would say that the community was able to do it quite well, especially like some of the best players that had enough money that they didn't try to like basically, you know, pump their own axes. So you know, that was definitely something, right, that was interesting and seemed like it could be a plausible future. I think like things like balancing, maybe economic balancing also potentially, right, things that would be controversial for game developers to change a lot in a Web3 economy, because even though, right, like Sky Mavis is driving the ship, I think there are still certain things that, you know, you have what you want to be kind of more careful around altering, I guess. Things like game balance, economic balancing and things like that. You know, I think long-term could be ripe for, you know, more community input. And it's just like, you know, how do you measure that thing, right? So measure those things, right? So for me, when it was like, you know, when people are making the sheet, say, like, okay, like I can see that these people really cared and put a lot of thought and effort into it. And I also can see the reasoning, you know, behind what they're doing. And then it's like kind of like you take like a lot of the best ideas from the best people. But like to turn that into something that's like more very, very, very systematic, it's still maybe hard to think to have right now.
So just to clarify for our listeners, when you guys are referring to balancing, you're referring to like meta shifts in the game itself,
yeah, like,
right?
Like, so for example, Axie, right, is like you can think of the, you know, the classic card game, right? You know, we would do balancing updates to that, and a lot of them was with like significant community input, especially from like high reputation players that, you know, were very smart and weren't trying to basically like, you know, change unfairly, make their Axie stronger.
Yeah, I think it's also something that like it's something that like most competitive games, they talk with the professionals, right? Because of course you would assume that like the top players are probably better at the game and understand the game better than the developers in most cases, I would say. It's exactly, you know, fire make more damage against water or less, you know, things like that.
So taking a step back real quick, Jiho, do you think governance can be a moat? So I know Ronan's approach is your approach, but I'm speaking more generally, like for maybe other players in the space. Like, do you think that could be actually be a reason why they might bite off a part of your market share, like because they have this more decentralized underpinnings that they market?
Maybe do you think that's maybe in a super long run. In the long run, like, you know, more open systems, right, oftentimes can get like an advantage.
Yeah, totally. I want to speak a little bit more about your Ronin's current moat, which I think is distribution. I think, you know, when I think of Ronin, I think it's this all-encompassing one platform to kind of do everything you need and want in regards to gaming. Could you speak a little bit more about this moat? And if you see it the same way, you know, maybe to you it's community, right? You could see it as that way as well. Maybe it's network effects, but I definitely do think that, you know, Ronin and the whole ecosystem has a head start because the network effects have started. It started a long time ago. I don't know if you have any takes or comments there.
Yeah. Ronin has over 2 million monthly active addresses right now, right? On a daily basis, Ronin is a top 4 blockchain, period, and by daily active addresses, right? That's not gaming, right? It's the number one gaming chain, but it's in the top 4 blockchains, period, by daily active addresses. The Ronin wallet downloaded over 12.5 million times. So we've gotten crypto and Web3 into the hands of the people who need it the most, who find it the most interesting, and places in developing countries where, you know, earning 1 cent per minute basically is something that could really have a significant impact on life. I do think that is where our moat is derived from, is, you know, the fact that we actually have players and that we actually have live games, and we have actually been through adoption cycles, right? And it's like that also, it's not just, you know, it's more than the community. It's also that experience, right? Like having gone through the fires and flame of 2021, 2022, understanding like, you know, these are all the things that are going to break the servers, the economy, inflation, deflation, emissions, and, you know, scaling. So, you know, I think it's the experience, it's the people, right? You know, another way to look at it is, right, it's like the human capital on the Ronin network, from developers to players to content creators, right? There are around 2,000 plus content creators on the Ronin network. And all of these things, you know, basically make it the best place to grow, build, monetize, fund a Web3 game.
Yeah, of course. I think there's obviously, right? There's a lot of parallels between this type of ecosystem and other like DeFi ecosystems. And what I mean by that is like more users, more developers, more publishers, more use. It's like an ongoing flywheel, right? Of course. So I'm curious, in regards to stakeholder alignment and like speaking back to community, you know, more people, more voices, more inputs, more feedback. I'm curious how Ronin manages and listens to the community, because, you know, as you continue to grow, people are just going to have stronger and stronger opinions about what's in their best interest. And that's always, I find, challenging sometimes for certain protocols, certain communities to find that balance of like, you know, taking into consideration this feedback, maybe not that at the moment. So I'm curious how your team approaches that and handles that as you continue to grow, you know, exponentially.
It's hard. We talk about it a lot. Like, how do we, in the early days of Axie, it was very easy to read all the feedback. It's like, yeah, we read all the feedback and we take into account this, you know, relatively easy to do. As there are now millions of players on the Ronin network, right? How do you do that? And we're blessed also to have founders like Luke from Pixels, right, who are masters at this, right? So, you know, we may have things to learn from them, right? I think that Pixels, one of the things that they've done really well is to build in public and talk to the community in a way that's reminiscent of the way that we used to build, right? That was actually something that I was wrote up about on the Axie side, is like, we need to return to that way of building. And I think we've like lost sight of it at times. I think part of it is, you know, the founders being visible and on the front lines, gathering that feedback and processing it and flagging the stuff that may be super, super relevant and creating systems to basically, propagate that to the teams and the teammates, right? It's like, they also have to be trained, I think, to be able to take those inputs, but not be overwhelmed by them. Right, because it can be really difficult when you're getting many, many different, even conflicting points of feedback, right? So systematizing it, it's not easy, to be honest. But yeah, I think you also have to be okay with the fact that you cannot make everybody happy, and that if you execute at a super high level, right, like that's at the end of the day, I think what the what the ecosystem and the community wants.
How much of this community input that you just described is driving the things you're shipping? How much of that would you say is like contributing to this ongoing new features, new things that you ship as a team?
So I think like, right, sometimes there are people who say like, you need to build this and we will be happy. And then there's, you know, other points of feedback around like, this is hurting me, right? And so I think, it's about like being able to gather user pain points, understand the frequency and the severity of different things that are impacting your users and hurting your project, and then finding elegant solutions that kind of like kill many birds with a few stones, right? And often, sometimes, you know, the solutions may not be, right? There may be ways to solve user problems that the players haven't thought of, right? People were saying, hey, I cannot make money breeding Axies anymore. You know, you need to do this and this back in the day, right? And it was like, okay, like, what about, like, what if we, create a token called SLP and, you know, have it on Uniswap? And they're like, what is Uniswap, right? Like, so sometimes, right, like, you know, there are people may be saying one thing, but it's like and they may be suggesting a solution. We also have to be cognizant that, like, the main, in a lot of cases, the main signal will be, right, like, this is what's hurting me, right? I would like this, or I'm having this experience, please help me. And you may be able to find some way that addresses that in a way that they don't imagine, perhaps using some new invention or technological breakthrough, right?
Yeah, totally. Shifting over a little bit over to DeFi real quick. How do you see DeFi integrating deeper with the gaming sector? Do you see the parallels? Do you see the touch points where these two sectors can meet?
Well, I think right now, right, they've gotten very intertwined. And, you know, through, right, it's like, yeah, imagine, you know, not being able to trade your gaming tokens on DEXs, or imagine if Ronin didn't have Katana. It wouldn't be a thing. But in terms of like the future of this, I think there's unexplored territory. One thing that is perhaps very interesting and something that could work on Ronin in a way that might not even be possible on other chains is like, right, fractionalized NFTs. I think this has been like invading Russia, though, right? Like, fractionalized NFTs have been attempted so many times, and they've never really quite worked out, but eventually they will. It makes sense for our user base, right? It's like, not everyone can afford a Mystic Axie, right? The premier Axies in the ecosystem, I think they're worth, I think, like over $12,000 right now, right? Not everyone can own an entire Mystic, but they might want to own part of one, right? And that might be like, you know, I could see a, right, a future where those even become like kind of like right, meme coins of some sort, right? It's like, you fractionalize like a rare NFT, and then like everyone, right, who owns a shard of that, right, becomes like united by some common identity.
So, it's also like a way of like creating guilds or clans or something like this, you know? Mm.
Yeah. So that's another thing, right? Is like, you know, perhaps fractionalizing, right, an NFT, and then each shard representing like ownership of a clan or a guild. Pixel is doing some really interesting stuff around this right now, right? With bonding curve, with a bonding curve, basically mechanism for distributing like pieces of guilds. So I think the next, you know, the next wave of like, you know, social, right, is like, I don't know, the next friend tech, right, it'll be like about like groups. It could be about like gaming guilds. That's, I think, the hypothesis of Pixels. And so, yeah, I would definitely keep a close look on what they're doing over there.
Gustav, were you going to say something?
No, it's okay. Just
yeah. Well, so, Juho, when I think of the Ronin ecosystem, I think of like what, like you mentioned this analogy earlier, like a nation state, right? So when you think of a nation state, it needs its economic underpinnings, right? And so when I think of Ronin, the Ronin ecosystem, I'm like, okay, so what are the economic underpinnings that are within Ronin at the moment, what's missing. You mentioned Katana. For our listeners who may not be familiar, that is the dex on the chain, correct? Mm-hmm. So whatever in the future, right? This is now just painting a picture of whatever this might look like. There has to be more, you know, pathways to enable economic trade, you know, different types of economic activity that the Ronin ecosystem, the users, the community would want, right? And so that may look like Ronin's own protocols of some sort of DeFi protocols, or it's so interconnected with the existing Uniswaps of the world, you know, whatever, you know, future infrastructure allows us to enable such activity. So I don't know. In my mind, I'm just, as you're speaking, I'm painting this picture of, like, you know, as Ronin continues to grow, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, more and more economic activity and desire to do more and more advanced economic type activity. I don't know if you have any takes or comments on that vision.
Yeah. I mean, like NFT lending, right? Like I was the first NFT lender, actually, right? NFTFi. Yeah. So, you know, and there are Axies that went to $1 million market caps, right, through fractionalization. So I do think, and, you know, we are part of the reason that we've got here is because we're typically at the forefront of blending NFTs and finance. And yeah, you know, I think that there will be a lot more experimentation. MetaLend is doing decent volume right now on Ronin as well, right, where they're basically an NFT lending protocol. And so, yeah, you know, I think, like, guilds are definitely, like, ripe for experimentation. Delegation models, systems of, like, on-chain questing, you know, Axie basic income. I still believe in some sort of a system like that where you basically, like, saying, like, basically just, you know, using protocol incentives to target very, very, very specific value creating activities. There's still a lot to be explored around that. So yeah, I think there's ton of unexplored design space.
Totally. I do want to call out the time, gentlemen. Jiho, anything you want to plug, anything you want to call out while we have you? Things to look forward to from Ronin and Sky Mavis?
So I think, like, one of the questions that we have now that we're faced with is, okay, like, Pixels is doing well. Pixels is another, like, Web3 experimental, Web3 native team, right? Kind of like Axie. Are those the only archetypes of Web3 games that can be successful and get 1 million users, right? It's like, congratulations, Pixels. I think is now the second Web3 game to get 1 million MAU. What would be the third? Would it be another Web3 experimental team? We know that our thesis is that it won't be like these AAA games that take a super long time to make, and then you, like, you know, add in Web3 mechanics. What if, you know, one thing that kind of made a light bulb go off in my brain was, remember when, like, Microsoft last bull market was like, yeah, we're not allowing NFTs in Minecraft. And you're like, okay, like, I don't know, like, why. I think it was, like, basically related to, like, Hypetopia or something, right? Like, I think that team is still building. They're like, we're not allowing that. But, like, but what if they did? And maybe this cycle, there will be teams, you know, that have maybe not as many users as Minecraft, but, right, like, a proven established NFT, proven established IPs that, you know, are more open to just, hey, like, integrating it. We just saw MapleStory, right, announce, unfortunately not on Ronin, right? But, like, you know, so that might be a meta as well, to be honest, where it's like you just take an existing IP that might need a little bit of breath of fresh. Maybe they have millions of users but are looking for new ways of basically maximizing the potential of the IP, right? So
love it. It's great to hear that the team is pretty open-minded in terms of what's onboarded next for Ronin. Jiho, I think it's been a great conversation. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Gustav, nice to meet you, Juan. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Gustav. We'll see everyone on the next episode of StablePod.